This is a Crowd podcast.
Gary and Phil Neville, defenders and the most famous footballing brothers this side of Shola and Sammy Amiobi, played for United, plus Everton in Phil's case, almost 1,000 appearances for United and 144 England caps between them, have won basically everything, plus authors, but let's see what the book club thought of their joint book for Club and Country in today's Football Book Club.
The way he just starts by being like, I checked up on my barn today, as if you're supposed to be like, oh yeah, cool, sure, you have a barn.
Both two brothers have got the big giant horn for Mr. David Beckham.
Gary was about to be subbed on, and he said to Alex Ferguson, I'm just going to the toilet.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less E.L. James, more Daniel James. I'm James Burke, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Darren Anderton's Take Note and Robert Earnshaw's Ernie, My Life at Cardiff City. But today we're reading Gary. It might be a good book, let's not laugh. But today, we don't want to get the Cardiff City fans on our back. But today we're reading Gary and Phil Neville's joint effort, the 1998 diary for Club and Country. And reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Belchin.
Hello. I'm really conscious of my voice.
Hello. Hello. Well, we've been told we should sing more on the podcast. We've literally had that complaint. We have been told we should sing more.
No, not by the production team, not by ML, just by someone.
That's true, by our fans. Our fans have insisted we should sing more constantly.
Guys, did anyone know the Nevilles published a diary? Did anyone know this book existed? Does anyone know this book is real?
There's scant kind of evidence for it on the internet, actually. I googled it extensively and it doesn't exist in many places.
I can't remember where I heard about it the first time, but the second I knew it existed, I knew we had to have it on this show. I knew it was a classic. Because we've done one diary. We did Marcus Hanneman's but before. It's Premier League diary and we all enjoyed that. But we have never, ever read a book by two footballers before. I mean, you're excited, guys, right? To talk about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Tonight is the night when two become one.
That is more relevant than you could possibly know.
Get ready for plenty of Spice Girls action, I think, in this episode. So stay tuned for insights into the life of professional sportsmen like this. With 15 games left, we can only really afford to lose two more, and we've still got to play Blackburn, Villa, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal and Leeds. The losses against Coventry and Southampton could come back to haunt us. Giggsy and Butty were both sick on the flight home. A bad night all round. Now this is going to be a proper football book. Okay, over the show, we're going to be going into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and our friend Ken is back with another song. But first, how are we all doing? We all got a glass of wine for today's book?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've been told to get rowdy.
I mean, you know, we're reading the Nevilles. Nothing says party hard like reading for Club and Country.
Well, like DJ Phil Neville,
That's a throwback reference to, I can't remember what book that was in. What book
I think that was
in?
Louis Saha.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
Saying that it was DJ Phil Neville.
Well, anyone else?
How do you remember that? I delete these books from my memory immediately after the episode. All of it.
There we go. That's another useless bit of my brain that I can delete. Good. Moving on.
I need to make room for the next book, so I've only got space for one book at a time.
I'm pretty sure in like other meetings with people, I've referenced like Gary Monk's autobiography, like as a literary work. Where I was like, well, that's actually quite interesting because I heard in a work by Gary Monk that
you cited it in an essay.
Yeah, the Swansea Cardiff rivalry is quite intense.
Talking to people we mentioned earlier, Sammy and Shola Amiobi. Haven't we thought about them in a little while? I was Googling. I won't lie. I was Googling famous footballing families. And do you want to hear a fact that blew my mind, which I haven't had time to check is true, but I saw it on Wikipedia and cited one other place.
I don't like this.
Where was the other place?
Yeah. Google. I just Googled. There was enough search things on there, which I thought, it checks out.
Okay, fine.
Here we go. Okay. Here's my mind-blowing fact. Apparently, Mark Viduka is cousins with Luka Modric.
What?
No.
I told you it was going to blow your minds. Apparently.
That is pretty cool.
Well, I knew that Viduka was like part Croatian, but because quite a lot of Aussie players for some reason.
There's a big Aussie-Croat link, isn't there? Historically.
Like, okay.
Oh.
As you know, like Tomic in The Tennis Player. There's lots of people.
Yes, yeah, there are. That's yeah. true. Yeah.
That are is. They like first cousins or...
Are they kissing cousins? Oh. Can those guys get married?
Yeah.
They would make a lovely couple, in fairness.
They would make a lovely couple. That'd be very nice. But anyway, to the footballing family of the day. And do you want to hear what Amazon's saying of the book?
Now, I must confess, I accidentally read this review and it is absolutely incredible.
As well. Yeah, thank you for doing the research, Tash, around this. But did you also know, so the book, as Tash has mentioned, has one review on Amazon. And also that gives it 1 star out of 5, which is by far the lowest amount.
There are more authors than reviewers of this book.
That is a first. So that is generally a first. But also it's an overly harsh review, first
it's
of all.
It's overly harsh, but it made me laugh in the about 25 words that it was more than the entirety of this book.
Yeah, it is long.
When Tash said, I've read this review as well, I was like, how does she know which review he's going to talk about? And that clears that up.
Apparently.
That solves it.
The one review.
Here's the 1-star review from TPS McNicholas. I think as we go through it might be a fake name. It's called Chocolate Brothers in Disguise, then 12 question marks. The review reads as such, about as entertaining as their post-match interviews and as searching as their hoofs down the line on a Saturday afternoon. Gary fails to mention that he's had such an England career thanks to the awful injuries sustained by Rob Jones many years ago. And then that's pretty much the long and short of it. And to be honest, I think it sounds like, and sorry, James, I'm going to pin this on the Liverpool fandom. I think that sounds like a bitter Liverpool fan.
Or their dad, maybe.
Dude, Neville. You think Neville's written that review?
Yeah, he's bitter that they've made it to that level. He's like, right. That's it. Anonymous reviews.
They weren't supposed to reach any higher than the Neville level. Fuck, sorry. Ruined that.
It's very hard. I think you made it better, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that is either an example of a bitter Liverpool fan or the anti-United public, which Gary and Phil hate so much.
I mean, he's actually harsher. They're both harsher to Leeds in the book than they are to Liverpool. They're quite respectful of Liverpool, actually.
But the fact that he brought up Rob Jones made me think Liverpool. For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Jones, the Liverpool fullback.
Or it's Rob Jones himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, TPS McNicholas.
And his brother, Phil Jones.
Oh.
Let's not make footballing families today. So that's what Rob Jones thought of the book. Guys, what did you think of the book?
I mean, they're not exactly the Gallaghers, are they? It
wasn't. They're definitely not the Gallaghers, no. They are.
Well, I mean, hang on. I was thinking they're like brothers 90s, and they're from Manchester.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then it's like if Adrian Mole had signed for United, it was not quite what I was expecting.
Gallagher brothers would there be if they were, which way around?
Neither. Ooh. There'd be that third Ooh. One who doesn't.
Oh, no. I think surely Liam's Gary. Sorry, just very quickly.
Yeah. Gary's,
and Phil is not.
Gary's oh. ever so yeah. slightly more of a bad boy than yeah. Phil. So.
Yeah, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah.
He forgot to capitalise 2 sentences, so yes, he is Liam.
I'm such a Liam. It is a... I actually think I'd like to read a book with the Gallaghers, but I think I enjoyed this more in many ways. It is not a great literary work in many ways, but in other ways, it's also maybe my favourite book we've read yet. It's just great fun. The whole book is great fun. They seem like lovely young lads, especially little Phil. Just want to give Phil a big old cuddle.
I want to give Phil a big cuddle.
He's
such a sweet little boy.
What did you think of it, Jack and Tash? Do you enjoy the book?
Yes.
Okay.
I think
for a long-winded yes. I preferred. I liked it more because when it came out was kind of when I was aware of pop culture.
Okay.
So everything that they were talking about are kind of my first memories.
Yeah.
Of anything happening in the world.
Yes.
So it was quite nice to read back for that reason. I didn't enjoy it because of their storytelling.
But I know what you mean by that, and I actually feel exactly that, because this was about the time I got into football. So I was, what, six, seven? I think I've been to a few Spurs matches, but it's when I knew about... It's when I... World Cup 98 was the year I properly got into watching England. I remember that's my first tournament I really, really remember. So just reading about the build-up towards that. I know this isn't the famous Neville Brothers year. It's not the treble-winning year of 98, 99. It's the year before that. But still, it's like a little introduction to all the gang, you know... Darren Anston pops up, Teddy Sheringham, Andy Cole, all these people, and it was I really enjoyed it for that reason.
Yeah, in that sense, I mean, it's barely a book, I would argue.
Yeah, I agree.
As much as it is just some sentences, like that have been like cobbled together.
I wrote
in paper.
Yeah, I wrote down in my notes the way it goes, flicks between Gary and Phil talking. It's a bit like Plato's Republic, but I don't think anyone's ever. I don't think anyone will ever make that comparison again.
I was going to say more like Gone Girl. Have you read Gone Girl?
I've never actually read that's Gone interesting. Girl, but okay.
Because Gone Girl is a chapter by the guy and then a chapter by the woman. And I was kind of thinking when he started talking about his cricket career, is this going to go really wayward and like there's going to be some cricket assassin that's coming after them both? But sadly, that did not.
Where did you get that?
You know, I'm often reading these books thinking, when's the cricket assassin going to turn up?
If where's the Gone cricket Girl, assassin?
I didn't realise quite how good at cricket Phil Neville was growing up.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. He was like England schoolboy's captain or something like that.
In many ways, he was nearly too good. The cricket assassin came out and killed him.
Of course, that makes sense.
There's quite negative feelings towards him about his cricket career, though, because he turned down 50 grand a year to become a footballer, and they said that he was just a money grabber, which, to be honest, I think is quite fair. I would do the same, wouldn't you?
It's fair that he did it. Yeah. Definitely.
What was the way he was like...
I don't know anything about cricket. I'm not reading a cricket book. Yeah. I'm reading about Nicky Butt being sick on a plane.
Again, every book we read, I want to read about Nicky Butt being sick on a plane. I mean, Phil in particular has a way of speaking that is basically reminiscent of someone struggling, like someone who hasn't revised for their... GCSE French oral. Like very simple sentences, very like just sort of like little snippets of words. There's a bit where he's talking about Sir Alex Ferguson asks Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if he's ready to play, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's reply is, "I'm very 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 fresh." Which
Tray.
Like he just has a way of speaking that is just so simple and like bitty. I by the end of it, you're kind of hypnotized. You're like, yeah, keep telling me about your girlfriend.
Oh,
like,
the girlfriend. That is the ultimate French oral exam kind of bit. He goes
so good.
There's a bit literally the second page where Phil is just describing their family life. Our dad Neville, our sister Tracy, and then he goes, "Tracy's an England netball international. Gary and I both have steady girlfriends. My girlfriend's name is Julie Killerley, who is a company secretary at a large construction firm. Gary goes out with Hannah Thornley, who's the sister of Ben Thornley, another player who came out through the United Youth Team. She's a student at Salford University."
And she has blue eyes.
Yeah.
It's like a French oral
exam.
He likes
the cinema.
Or like he's writing to like a pen pal or his granddad who lives abroad or something. It's very like, here's an update on our lives.
But I guess that is authentic to the diary, and that's what do we enjoy that format in general, the fact that it kind of, so it starts off in May 1997, I think it starts off with and then it kind of takes us through day by day. And we read Marcus Hanneman's book, and Marcus Hanneman's book was very loosely a diary, but this one it really did feel like a diary all the way through it, and I felt like they had sat down and actually written a lot of these things. It seemed like, well, how I imagine the Nevilles anyway.
Oh, I reckon they both had a computer and it was like, "Mom, I want to go on the computer. I want to do a bit of the book. Gary's hogging it." Because there are some bits that are just like completely, like Gary just mentioning like just completely random, pointless things that are going on in their lives. And then Phil yeah, jumping in for no reason. Have you seen that Frasier episode where they try and write a book together? Niles yeah. and Frasier try and write a book together.
Yeah.
It was, that's how I visualized it in my head. They're both sitting in a hotel room going like, oh, don't use that font. Oh my God, you suck. Yeah, but I don't know if that's entirely true.
I thought one of my favorite things was just how they just conflate different stories within a paragraph. It just goes straight to something totally unrelated. Like Thursday, 7th of August, Gary, I read in the papers that Gianluca Vialli has given up smoking. A few players in English football smoke, but tend to keep it quiet. On the continent, they're much more open. I was relieved at the news that Grobbelaar, Fashanu and Segers were acquitted of match fixing. I don't see how a footballer can throw a football.
What? It has the vibe of like a stand-up comic who hasn't prepared for a show. Yeah. And is like, what's in the news today?
Love, I see. Next subject.
I see. I see the England cricket team's not doing so well, am I right? Ooh.
Yeah, that was a particularly lazy day for them, I think. Like, nothing much had happened. The conflating stories reminds me of... does anyone remember the really famous Britney Spears tweet? Which was something like, I love Lady Gaga. I think she's such an inspirational artist. Does anyone think global warming might be a good thing? Something, I think that's what the tweet is. It reminds me of just the quick fire combination of those two.
Free Britney.
Sorry, yeah, of course.
Obviously free Britney.
Tash, every episode you're going to say that.
Yeah, with good reason. Until she's free.
Yep, fair enough. But I can see we're going
to
have...
We're in the 90s here. We need to mention
that,
Britney.
That is very true. We are back in 1997.
Very much in the 90s.
I think the kind of time capsule element of the 90s was what really inspired me. Well, to be honest, I say inspired. It's what managed to keep me going to the end. Because I wanted to see what happened in 1998, that's all.
It is very much of the time.
Yeah.
This whole
book. I enjoyed that. I think that's where the diary format comes into its own, because on the other books that we've read, you know, we don't hear about when they went to the cinema to go and watch a movie. You know?
To go watch the Spice Girls movie.
I know that on July the 7th, they went to see the Spice Girls movie, and that is very pertinent information to me.
And but I do. I think Phil Neville describes it
as... He was bored.
I was bored, but the kids loved it, so I think you can't criticise the Spice Girls or
Do you remember who he said was actually in the cinema? Yeah. Because can you just mentally imagine this? He says that he's in the cinema watching the Spice World film, and at the same time is The Boss, Peter, Teddy, Geordie, Ollie and Ryan.
Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, Alex Ferguson.
Yes.
That's the bit that stood out to me. Well,
go through that again. Alex Ferguson.
The
Peter
boss.
Schmeichel. Yeah.
Peter Schmeichel.
The son,
Teddy.
Jordi Cruyff, the son of Johan Cruyff. He should be kept away from that.
Ryan Giggs,
yeah.
Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah.
Oh, and Beckham, obviously.
No, Beckham wasn't there.
Why wasn't Beckham there?
He probably was at the premiere, wasn't he?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Lads, I can sort you out some tickets to the cinema tonight. Oh, yeah, what are we going to see? It's not going to be Spice Girl. Spice Girl, is it? No.
Something else. Yeah. It'll be Titanic.
Can you imagine walking into, like, Salford Odeon and they're all sat there and amazing. Absolute scene.
I just can't imagine a team meeting where Sir Alex Ferguson is watching Spice World.
Yeah.
Also, for some reason, the image of Peter Schmeichel sitting ashen-faced watching Spice World has really tickled me.
It's Ferguson that throws me. The thought of Sir Alex Ferguson sitting watching that film is just, like, ridiculous.
It reminds me of when I dragged my grandma along when I was a kid to Pokemon, the first movie. And she was, like, 70-odd and just sitting there, like, on the verge of an epileptic fit the whole way through the film. It's so bright, that
Do you think when, you know, the bit in Spice World where they jump over the Tower Bridge?
Yes.
Do you think Fergie was like, they're not going to make it? They're not going to make it. There's no way.
No, he was like, these special effects are shit. Clearly made out of plasticine.
It made me think that, you know, quite often in these diary entries, it's like, the boss wasn't at training today. Like, was he just at the cinema every time? Like, he's hardly ever at training.
Watching Titanic over and over.
Do you think they just randomly went to the cinema and, like, saw Ferguson was there? And they were like, oh, cool, boss, you're here as well. He was like, oh, yeah. Cool.
It is a time which, for us 90s kids, I'm going to say it, it is a time which is, you know, it really brings back all those memories straight away. And a lot of those things, it's not just the Spice Girls. He mentioned Diana a lot.
That's a very strange section.
That entry.
That whole section is so bizarre.
Because you're like, five or so pages on Diana dying.
they're training, they're playing, and the next thing is...
The initial entry is very odd, because...
This is tribute to her.
Well, he sort of...
It's so
weird. The
first
time he mentions it, but then he immediately goes into sort of, like, this debate whether she's the best-looking woman in the world.
Yes!
And then sort of sandwiches it with, at the end, like, it was a very numb time. Like, at the end, he goes back into being sort of sincere about it. But all the middle bits, like... Well, I think she's probably the best-looking woman in the world. It's a very weird entry.
And Ryan Giggs is like, she's absolutely unbelievable. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of respectful. At 1:30 this morning, I woke to the terrible news that Diana had been badly injured in a car crash. Later, the news came through she died. I'd never met her, but whenever anyone asked me who I thought was the best-looking woman in the world, this is immediately obvious. I would say Diana. Bex used to laugh at me about that. That is so cute of Gary.
That's
Neville
why he hasn't got,
like,
his night urge yet.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is cute that Gary's going, like, no, she is. Princess Diana is the until Giggsy turned around and told us that he had met her and she was absolutely unbelievable.
One thing that really tickled me about this whole Diana saga is the bit when, like, 10 days later, England are playing at Wembley and they're all stood in the tunnel, and he says that Candle in the Wind is playing.
Oh, yeah.
And Ian Wright turns around to him and says, we're doing it for Diana. It's the most significant game of our life. As if Diana's gone to heaven and is watching, like, Moldova play in North London or something.
It's so Moldova! It's England, Moldova! I mean,
I do think we are...
It's so good!
To play. I agree, it is a bit cheesy, and it's funny reading it now, but... Look, thinking back to that moment, it was, like, probably one of the most defining moments of our life.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, sure. I think it's that we're living through a pandemic currently where football is still going on and, like, loads of stuff is happening constantly. This idea that there'd be, like...
They called games off for...
Yeah, for... It seems so weird.
Yeah.
There's also a bit where during training, Phil Neville's like... no one's mentioned the fact that Diana's died. And you're like, yeah, but like, why? Like, what does that...
Glenn Hoddle mentions it. That he's the only one who mentions it. Glenn Hoddle's like, right, guys, you know. She's died.
Glenn's got Eileen What's-a-chops chatting to her.
Yeah, true. That's true. That's true.
Glenn wants to have a chat with Diana. Just
she really wants you to beat Moldova, guys.
She thinks we should play a 3-4-3, actually. So we can try some new tactics. The whole book is them talking about how they're trying to win the league and how they're trying to win the European Cup. They're trying to win the World Cup with England.
Yep.
Like, that's the main focus of the book. But what's great about this book in general is the way that there are these little odd subplots that keep on coming up as well. Like they start off all their sections by saying, like, you know, we have to beat Leicester this week. We have to make sure that we keep this winning run going. We're going to win the European Cup. We've just lost our boot sponsorship with Diadora. it's just really, like, there are these odd little extra things, and they keep on coming up in the book. Like, they lose their boot sponsorship to Pony, which I wasn't aware is and then they talk like, oh,
Pony
we're gonna
used to
get
sponsor
Nike.
Spurs, I think.
And then but then they sort of like do weird little like tangents into like their kit negotiations with first with Adidas, who they feel like they've been fobbed off with a press secretary, and then also they're like, well, we used to be with Adidas and then they didn't offer us a very good deal. They've lost us twice now. It's very kind of like we will not be taking our business with you again, sir. It's the whole thing has a very weird kind of like...
They say that about Nike as well, don't they?
Yeah,
Like, Nike wouldn't wait for them, but Diadora would wait, so they thought that they had more integrity, so they went back to Diadora, which I don't believe for a second.
Yeah.
If Nike are coming knocking, are you going, oh, sorry, Diadora, yes, okay.
I will not have any slag... I'm not having any slagging off of Diadora on this podcast. Diadora sponsoring
Cash,
our show.
We are sponsored by- yeah, we're sponsored by Diadora. That's why I look so good right now.
Shit.
But it's just like odd little things that keep on coming back, like like the continuing saga of the Spice Girls, and also when they're playing for England, they just get really upset at the idea of people singing "Stand Up If You Hate Man U."
Oh,
and
they
this
hate
becomes
that.
Like this they get so
they
upset
really
about
it.
This, and it's really
that
funny.
That is classic United kind of like, how dare anyone dislike us?
Yeah.
That kind of attitude.
How dare they? There's a bit where the England are playing and like Beckham is on the pitch, and "Stand Up If You Hate Man U" comes around the starts around the stadium at Wembley, and David Beckham turns to them like, are they singing what I think they're singing? And Phil Neville has to be like, look, just block it out. And you can sort of like imagine David Beckham going, then all these people are standing. They must hate Man U. Oh! It is really weird, because I suppose this is all before Twitter, and this is all before social media, where you sort of get that real sense of like, actual active hatred of other clubs.
Yeah.
And I suppose that like as in hatred of other clubs outside of the context of when your team plays them, if that makes sense. So like in England would be the only place where you would get people saying stand up if you hate Man U, and Man U players would be like, you should be supporting us.
Yeah.
Like I think that's probably quite interesting. It's probably the last time that around this era is the last time that players get shocked at the idea of other clubs hating them.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
No, like now, obviously, you're like, of course, everyone hates City. You know, of course, everyone hates Liverpool.
Yeah. That,
like, duh.
I know. I know what you mean by that. Yeah.
Whereas I think that now they were sort of quite protected from it because they, you know, only saw their own fans. They saw fans when they're playing against them.
But saying that, there was a moment where someone booed Darren Anderson. I was like, you fucking what? It's like, don't you dare. Don't you ever boo Darren Anderson.
That bit was so funny because they were like, they booed Darren Anderson, they booed the Man United players, and then Ian Wright got the ball and they all cheered. And I was like, I know who they support. Yay!
Well, weirdly, they slag off their own fans at one point. They're sort of like, you know, they're great away from home, but sometimes they're really flat and they should be making more noise, 55,000 people or whatever it is, like slagging off their own fans.
Yeah. It's weird that, isn't it?
Yeah,
that is. It's quite a big risk in a book that is going to be bought almost exclusively by Manchester United.
And people for an ironic podcast 23 years later.
Yeah, I assume.
The two main crowds. But I'm glad you bring up the subplots, Jack, because there's another subplot, which I'm sure you guys were all as hooked as I was by, the subplot of Gary Neville's barn conversion. Can somebody cue the dramatic music? It's a bit of a different one this week. A little bit of a different dramatic reading.
Oh, God. I don't like change.
Oh, I'm sorry. This change is about to happen. Much like...
Oh, no.
Go on, Jack. You do it.
This bit of scrubland in Bury.
Okay, I'll do it, but I'm not happy about it. Cue dramatic music.
Thank you very much, Jack. This dramatic reading is called Gary Tries to Get His Barn Converted, The Complete Ordeal. it all kicks off after talking about David Beckham's love letters he gets. So just naturally pops in straight afterwards. Sunday, 17th of August. This afternoon I went for my regular checkup in my barn. I bought it in May 1997 and I'm converting it. I plan to move in next summer. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, the way he just starts, and again, this is typical of this book, the way he just starts by being like, I checked up on my barn today, as if you're supposed to be like, oh yeah, cool, sure, you have a barn. Great, thanks, Gary. Thanks for the context. Thanks for the warning that you have a barn. Oh.
The ins and outs of football, of this Premier League footballers in this era, are not as exciting as I thought they were going to be, I'll be honest. I was tiny bit disappointed. But anyway, I've had a few teething problems with the barn. The lad who sold it to me was going to sell the surrounding land to the Forestry Commission. But I only brought the barn on the condition that I could have that land too, because they were planning public picnic areas practically on my doorstep. I don't think I'm the most popular person in Bury at the moment, but I'm not going to let it harm the land. It's still going to be grazing land with cows and sheep on it.
So that's a bit I couldn't understand. He doesn't want people picnicking, but he's fine with like
sheep
cows and
there.
Sheep being like, yeah,
yeah,
like outside his house.
Yeah,
he doesn't like litter, okay?
That's fair. I mean, look, cows and sheep do a different kind of litter.
No cows and sheep are going to be singing Stand Up If You Hate Man U.
That's true, yeah.
That's what he's mainly
Gary!
Worried.
Gary, you shit! Oh, those sheep are back again.
Anyway, it's all kind of going well for a couple of months. Then, Thursday, 4th of December, I finally got planning permission for my barn conversion today. Good work, Gary. Oh,
sorry, again, the image that like people have been reading this book up to this point being like, when's he going to talk about the barn again? Yeah. What's happening with
Gary,
the barn?
Okay, great. We knocked down a wall we shouldn't have, so we had to go through the whole planning stage again after a complaint from the guy I bought the house from, who'd been involved in a long-running feud with the planning authority. It would have been a huge financial loss if I hadn't got it. Now I'm looking forward to moving in next summer. Then, literally straight afterwards, he gives the World Cup draw for World Cup 98. No explanation going into that at all. So, as you can see, it's been a bit of a patchy time so far. So, 4 months later, Wednesday, 29th of April, a few weeks ago, I was given a quote for a fitted kitchen for my barn. It seemed expensive, so my dad sent someone who works him at Bury to get to another outlet in the same company's chain. He was quoted £10,000 less for the same job, and we ordered the kitchen at the cheaper price. Today, Dad and I went over and confronted the head of the kitchen. Imagine that. Imagine that.
I'm Neville Neville. This is my son Gary Neville, and we're here about a £10,000 kitchen.
We confronted him over the huge difference in the two quotes. He confirmed the original quote had been given was way over the top, and he apologised. Later, I rang the woman who had surcharged me for having a famous face and told her I didn't appreciate being ripped off. I was angry. She'd done a lot of work for me, and I trusted her. I just want grazing land for my sheep. You're ruining it with this, tainting it with your kitchen. And luckily, there's one final segment about the barn.
Oh, thank goodness.
It all kind of goes okay. Today, the first of 150 wagon loads.
Wagon loads?
Like the old West turning up at his house. Of Old Trafford topsoil arrived at the site of my barn. They're laying a new pitch at Old Trafford this summer, and a couple of weeks ago, I asked Keith Kent, our heads groundman, if he could spare any soil. They started digging up the old pitch today and giving out lumps of turf as mementos to thousands of United fans. So there, and then that's is the last we hear of it. That's the last we hear.
It's so weird because it's like someone's put a Grand Designs episode in the middle of this football.
And it's kind of a disappointing end.
That's the longest the least dramatic reading we've ever had.
I told you, I'm taking dramatic readings to a strange new place.
1 star.
One thing that seems to crop up quite a lot, which I'm sure you've noticed, is lots of things seem to happen in and around toilets. And it's not just one of them.
In the book or in general in life?
Well, both.
Okay.
And it's not just one of the brothers. Both of them seem to draw like memories or attach seminal moments to toilets quite a lot. It's very strange. Like Gary, I think it's on like page two or three. Gary was about to be subbed on and he said to Alex Ferguson, I'm just going to the toilet. And when he got back, they'd scored. So he was told to sit back down. Then literally the next entry, Phil mentions the toilet as well. It's like he's gone, oh, well, I'm going to have to mention the toilet as well. And there's actually, in this mention here, there's absolutely no need to mention that he was in the toilet. He just says, I went to Old Trafford this morning and bumped into Henningberg in the toilet. Why did you... The last three words aren't necessary. Like, just say you bumped into him. It doesn't need to be in the toilet. Then Phil got food poisoning in Italy. Solskjaer withdrew from the squad an hour before kickoff with a stomach upset. Gary had a stomach bug for about 2 weeks at one point. It just goes on and on. It's just so many mentions to stomach.
Oh, yeah, where he's like, I spent most of the night on the toilet. Yeah. Like, he's like, just so you guys know, I had a bit of a stomach bug. Spent most of the... And that's a whole entry.
Yeah.
That is a whole section of the book.
Yeah, thanks,
Gary.
Is
like, yeah.
He is a very sickly boy, actually. There's a bit where he has hay fever towards the end. He's like, oh, I think I've got hay fever. Yeah.
I counted, and at one point, there's 27 days where they talk about an injury.
Wow.
A 27-day straight run. There are so many maladies in this.
Is that the diarrhea? In many ways,
I tripped over the toilet. Oh, and I injured my foot.
In many ways, James, as you mentioned, it's kind of like the toilet is like Rick's in Casablanca. It's like where all the action happens. All the action happens in the toilet, because you're right. He meets loads of like trainees and stuff. Just like he goes, oh, apparently Jonathan Greening's signing for us. I saw him in the toilet.
I wonder how many toilets his barn conversion has got.
He's been overquoted for his toilet, but he's fine with that one because. Because he wants a really good toilet. If you're gonna take Henningberg to see a toilet, it needs to be a good toilet.
But then there's like later on when they talk about being in the England setup with Hoddle when he gets the famous faith healer Eileen Drury in, and all the players seem to be going to her. He said like 20 out of the 30 went to her for different things, but they didn't go about it for stomach relief. Like, why aren't they going to see her? At least try.
Yeah, they're like ideal. Yeah,
I reckon. Eileen tried and was like, no, sorry.
Nothing I can do here.
This is beaten.
Your stomach is too haunted. What am I meant to do? Well, anyway, on the subject of toilets, I think it's time for a break. So we'll see you for more Neville chat after the break.
Welcome along to a brand new podcast called 21st Century Football, a complete guide, well, so far that is. This podcast is all about celebrating the best of the world's most beautiful game, but only if it happened in the 21st century. This series is all about championing the greatest footballers of the last 20 years. Each week we'll have a variety of hosts, including YouTube star Statman Dave Stephen Tries.
Got that underwear range.
You've got a pair on now, haven't you, Stephen?
No. I soiled mine this morning.
And myself, Will Brazier, will also feature radio legend Adam Brown. Find us on your regular podcasting sites, as well as our brand new YouTube channel. Search 21st Century Football.
It sound right, boy.
Welcome back to Football Book Club on the Nevilleses. What's it called for club?
What's the plural?
The Nevilleses. Welcome back.
The Nevilles podcast. Welcome back. Non-stop Nevilles all the time. We've got Tracy, we've got Phil, we've got Gary, we've got Neville.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we're reading The Nevilles' Foot Club and Country. And I've written down in my notes, romance.
Yes.
Would anyone like to talk about, Tasha, sounds like you would like to, would like to talk about the romance in the book?
Oh, yes, because there is one major romance in this book, and we have already touched on it.
Ooh.
But both two brothers have got the big giant horn for Mr. David Beckham.
Does he get mentioned?
He is in pretty much every entry during the season.
Yes.
And both of them love him, which I thought was quite interesting. They don't seem to have a very different relationship with him. But Gary, oh, wow, he follows him around like a puppy dog. There is one entry where he talks about going shopping with him. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, God.
Oh, it's so sweet.
It's so sweet. It's like what I used to do when I was at school, and like a girl from the year above would ask if I wanted to go shopping with her on a Saturday. And I'd like go, and then I'd go to her house and she'd have all the posh juices in the fridge. It was like that. Because they go into Manchester and Beckham tries to get him to buy an 8.5 grand watch. And he's like, no, I don't spend my money on that, but I'll come round to your house and see your new puppies. It's so weird.
He's got great puppies, and they're named after his favourite rappers.
Yeah. Snoop and Puffy.
Yeah! Mum won't let me listen to those two, but I think they're really cool.
It's just so cute.
It's really cute.
And there's this urban legend that I don't know if you've heard, but there's always been this legend that Beckham saw Victoria on the telly and said that he was going to marry her.
Yeah.
And I've always thought it must be absolute crap. But if this man with no imagination is saying it in his book, then I now believe that it's
Which of the two men with no imagination you're referring to?
Gary says that.
It is a really weird bit where, like, Gary's like, he turned to me and said, I really want her. And you're like, what?
And you can imagine Gary being like, shit, he's found a woman that he likes more than me.
Oh, God, no, it's cool, it's cool. I mean, you know, I guess you'll have someone else to take you watch shopping.
He's off to buy a Gucci mini dress.
I wonder if the first time Gary met Victoria, he was like, you ever hurt my David? Just be nice to him.
Right, it's time for Out of Context Nevilles. And there's some controversy here. As it turns out, James and Tash had a different, longer edition to me. Go on, what's your out of context from the segment that's not good enough for Jack and I? Too good for Jack and I.
If you swallowed a box of paracetamol, you'd struggle.
That is so good!
Oh my God,
I want to read it so much.
I really want it. I want to read it really
much. It's my favourite bit of the whole book, that right at the end.
Tash, is yours also saying else that we weren't privy to?
No, I don't think so. But I just loved it because it is an uneventful training session. Apart from the pitch being invaded by a giant pepper army.
He's back.
He's back, the giant pepper army man. Oh, because you didn't, did you do...
Oh, you weren't in that episode?
No.
David Seaman's
book. Yeah. Invades the France.
A pepper army has appeared before.
But he calls him a giant pepperoni man. Which made us go like, wait, is there a different giant pepper? Yeah. Like another meat-based snack that is.
You realise we're
going
to have to start. We're going to add on. I have to add on to Peter Reed Watch and do Giant Pepperoni Man Watch.
And Football Book Club fans, we're reading Giant Pepperoni Man's book next week. Meet Myself and I. Yes,
that's really good.
Thank you very much.
Chimera.
Yeah.
Damn it. I was never going to say
it. Let
that.
It go! Jack, do you have an out of context?
I do. It is. I had a great childhood, but the one blip was Man United's lack of success.
It says that, Gary or Phil?
I think that's Gary.
It's a Gary thing to say.
Can I do one that's Phil? That's really funny as well.
I think that's fair enough.
He's talking about when there's a penalty that could have been... He could have given away a penalty against Arsenal. And he says, maybe I should have stopped with my hand, but that would have been cheating.
He's very moral, Phil. That's why I want to give him a hug.
Very moral. Very like, let me explain the rules of football to you. Great guy.
My one is also Phil. And it's not really so much... It's out of context, but it's also, I think, the saddest line in history. Is there any chance we can play some sad music?
I know what you're going to say here.
I think you're going to do.
Because I've made a note of it and put a sad face next to it.
If it's the same, I'm going to watch you see the same. So, sad music, please. Phil, I'm loving it in midfield. It's good fun. I'd like to stay there and hopefully score a few more goals. People want to talk to you when you score.
Yep, it's the same.
Oh my god. Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh, Phil. People want to talk to you. People want to talk to you when you don't score. God. Oh my gosh.
Did you score today, Phil? No, I didn't, but go to your room.
Sorry, Neville. And that was out of context. Neville's. Oh. Something that I'd like to talk about in the book is the absolute rubbish that the Neville brothers get roped into doing as part as part of their duty as a footballer. Especially Phil Neville, I've noticed, in the book. Gary gets roped along to some, but Phil is a sucker for punishment all the way through this. Did you guys notice some of these things?
Yeah.
Some of them are incredible.
So page 68... Phil gets roped along to be a judge for the Northwest Talent Show at the Willow Swordford Rugby League Club, where the other judges include the Battersbees from Coronation Street. And then he goes, 16-year-old called Jamie Metcalf won. Remember the name? Nothing.
I googled him.
I googled him too.
Yeah, nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, poor Jamie Metcalf.
Oh, yeah. If he's about, talk to us and we'll judge your talents.
Yeah, completely. I'm sure he'd love that. He's already been judged by Les Battersby. I'm sure he's he's absolutely fine. Also, of course, we mentioned they go to the Spice Girls movie. On page 105, he opens a garage in Stretford. And the most depressing of all, nothing tops this for depressing. Let me find it quickly. Page 222.
Oh, no, I hate this one.
This is so sad. After Gary's just played Tunisia in the World Cup.
Oh,
Phil,
no.
I opened the summer fair at Martin Edwards' daughter's primary school today.
That is the most heartbreaking bet, genuinely.
Oh, but then he's really self-deprecating about it. He's like, probably because I'm the only Man U player left in the country.
Oh,
Phil.
No, Nicky Butt.
Yep, true.
Nicky Butt's there as well.
Nicky Butt's there as well.
If it's true that they were reading each other's entries, then this is particularly harsh because Gary's on that day is, I'm really looking forward to my first game in the World Cup.
Yeah. I love going to the primary school and playing coconut shy. Yeah.
My World Cup was this year. Forget France 98.
Poor Phil. Oh, poor Phil. But I think and
Phil it's playing hook a duck.
Gary gets dragged along to some things he doesn't want to go to as well. He goes to see Chicago at the Delphi Theatre. He says, to be honest, musicals aren't my cup of tea. After an hour and 20 minutes, the curtain came down and I thought it was the end. It killed me when I found out there was another half.
Oh, God. Gary Neville discovering the concept of intervals was my favourite bit of this book.
Cell Block Tango is after the interval. He'll be fine. He will love the second half.
Yeah, he actually doesn't mention how much he liked the second half, but I'm sure that was unwritten. He loved it.
He was rewriting it about his brother. He had it coming.
Nice. That is a niche Chicago joke if we like it. But nothing tops NAF events for... I don't even know how to get into this, to be honest. The evening we went to a party for Ryan Giggs's mum moving into her house too. It is one of... I don't understand why... First of all, I don't really know why they're going... Why Ryan Giggs is... I get why Ryan Giggs' mum is having a housewarming party, but why are the Nevilles and Beckham and everyone going to that? And for this event...
Is she a MILF?
I probably.
What a question!
Oh, she's a MILF? Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're going. She's a MILF. Yeah.
But they all stuck together that lot, didn't they? The class of 95
they did, but why
or whatever
would they go
it is
to the... Giggs' mum's birthday? Housewarming. In the evening, he went to a party at Ryan Giggs' house. It was a housewarming party for Ryan's mum, who's moving in when he moves out. The party's theme was for the boys to come dressed as girls and the girls to come dressed as boys. But Gary and I thought it was a wind-up. When we arrived, we were the only one in men's clothes. Classic Nevilles. Classic Nevilles.
The idea of that is so, like, the idea of wearing women's clothing, it must be a joke. There's no way it could be true.
They were both turned up in jumpers, definitely, yeah. Like shirts underneath, drinking.
Jumpers
like
with the words, I am a man, written on it.
Have you seen that picture of, why is it the class of 93, is it, or 2?
92, class 92.
92. Have you seen that picture of them when they're all in a night out, and Beckham's there looking, like, classically cool, and then there's the rest of them, the Nevilles, Skulls, Nicky Butt. Is that all of them, I think? And the rest of them look like they go into a school disco, like they're 12-year-old. It's ridiculous.
They are, I mean, I feel bad that women cry. They are so sweet all the way through.
Yeah, I love these sweet boys.
One person you missed out in Class 92, Robert Savage, as they refer to him.
Robert Savage, yeah.
Which made me laugh so much.
So funny.
He was not
Robert Savage. Robert Savage, yeah.
Not Robbie at that time, Robert. Yeah. Robert, have you done your homework?
Needs to earn the name Robbie.
And then the end of the book, do we think it reached a satisfying conclusion? Of course, we've had the season. They had the season with United where they don't win the league. Arsenal just put them to post that, which must have been strange for you, Jack, seeing Arsenal win the league. But actually, it's stranger for me as a Spurs fan. I can't really say too much.
It's probably stranger when he was like, Arsenal barely concede any goals. Jack must have been
conceptually, that was bizarre. And also, they were like, they've won 10 in a row. I was like, what is that?
10 in a row? What's
going
on? At
least you've got to look at a good Arsenal team. The Spurs team was like Ramon Vega, Clive Wilson.
It's true.
Yeah. No offence to Clive Wilson. He did his best. Anyway, it's very open against Spurs. But anyway, do we think it reached satisfying conclusion? Because it ends with France 98.
Well, it does for you. Just for you.
Sorry, that's true. It doesn't end with that.
Different edition time. We should have a little
Wob, wob, wob.
No, not like that.
To be honest, it should end where yours ends.
Yeah, it should end.
Like, obviously, we know what happens in the 99 season. It just gets to December and then goes, okay, see ya. Like, it doesn't it doesn't continue to anything good, really.
In terms of our edition, ending in France 98, what do we think of that?
Well, the build up to the World Cup squad being announced, it's actually, I mean, that is the most dramatic part of the book. It couldn't have been more dramatic, yeah, really.
I agree.
I think they utilize their individual diary entries really well in this bit, and then following on from that as well, they do. Because up until that point, they're basically doing the same thing, preparing for the same games. Everything is kind of the same. But then the build to the World Cup squad being announced. So Phil is nervous about not being selected. He finds it strange because a few days before the squad is announced, Hoddle's assistant, John Gorman, is it?
John Gorman, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who that was, but John Gorman, yeah.
He was Spurs' assistant as well when he followed Hoddle around quite a few places.
But John Gorman pulls Phil aside a few days before the squad's announced and saying, like, they've got nothing to worry about, you know, just enjoy the next few days, you're all right, don't worry about the squad. And Phil then says he wasn't convinced by that for some reason, and he had a bad feeling in his stomach, probably another stomach bug. And then Phil played in a friendly and had a really, really bad game. He said he couldn't move his legs. Like, I don't know why.
He got subbed off at half time. Yeah, if someone couldn't move their legs, he played 45 minutes.
And then he got subbed off at half time. And then, the announcement was made, and Phil didn't get in the squad. But actually, we find this out through Gary's entry. So Gary gets called in, and he did make the squad. But when Hoddle is telling him that he's probably going to be playing right wing back some of the time, Gary immediately knows that Phil isn't in the squad because that's a position he's stronger in. And he said he zones out. It's really quite nice. Like you said, he doesn't, even though he's in the squad, he zones out. He doesn't take notice of the rest of the meeting because he knows his brother isn't in. And there's this really nice bit afterwards where obviously it's announced and Phil's not in. And they sort of have this really nice moment where they're cuddling each other and crying, and then Nicky Butt comes in and he's not in the squad, and they're all crying together and hugging each other. It's quite nice, actually.
It made me think of the X Factor auditions when they did Judges' Houses. It was like that. Everyone was like kind of getting called through individually, being told whether they made it or not.
Split the bands up and they're like, you can go through, but you off you go.
Oh no, they split up the Nevilles.
Yeah.
I think you're solo acts. Out of 10, what are we giving it? Jack?
I'm actually going to give it a 7 because I think that it was fun and interesting, but I think that conceptually it's all over the place. I liked a lot of it. And actually, to be honest, I personally did struggle quite early on because it was quite like, oh, once it sort of hit its rhythm and once I understood what it was, I was like, okay, yeah, I can get into this.
Once the barn came in.
Yeah, once you're like, tell me about the barn, I need to know more about the barn. But actually, and also James is right, the end is genuinely really good. Like, and also because it's we were saying, it's my first World Cup. Like, it's the one I know everything about. So every score he mentioned, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm on board. I know what this is. So yeah, in that sense, I really enjoyed it at the end. But there's a lot to get through.
Tash?
6.
That's a score for this book.
I think, in general,
I think we're far too kind to all these books a lot of the time. I was thinking back retrospectively, Urzel got 7.5. That wasn't a 7.5.
I think that was a guilt 7.5. Yeah, I think so. Serious. We were like blinded by the big words.
This is a bit like how Arsenal feel about Urzel now. It's like retrospectively, you get to look back at his career and be like, oh yeah, maybe it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit similar.
Yeah, I think so. And we all got suckered in. James Baldwin, what are you giving it?
I wish they'd shown a little bit more personality, but like you, I liked the late 90s references. And I actually quite liked that they were sort of pals with the Liverpool players. I was expecting them to be hating on them, but they weren't. They were like, oh, really good lads. It's like, that's Rory nice. Fowler. They all like each other.
You couldn't meet two nicer lads than Fowler and McManaman or something.
Yeah,
or something.
It's nice.
They're not Spice Boys. They're lovely guys.
Oh, yeah.
I love that bit.
Yeah, Stan Collymore pops up a lot in the book, weirdly.
He does.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go 4.7.
So I'm torn between a 3 and a 10. I don't know which the two to get. I don't know what to say. I'm a sellout either way because I think that in terms of entertainment, it was probably my favourite to read. In terms of actual merits as a book, it's pretty low down, to be honest. But fuck it, 10, whatever. I don't care. I ruined the podcast. I think my first ever 10. I recommend everyone goes and buy it because this is exactly what I want the football book to be.
Actually what I recommend is that you find a friend who can read it for you and give them the best bits, which is basically what we've done here.
Yeah. Also, I've just realised by giving it a 10, I've given it exactly the same score as we always give books.
You fool!
It gets a 3, it's getting a 3. Okay, so now 23 divided by 4. 5.75.
Oh, wow. Justice for the Nevilles.
I don't know what... This is meaningless. Who cares? I think that's about right. It's better than one star, thanks to Rob Jones. Okay, moving on to this week's quiz. For the quiz, you were named out of players I totally forgot were at United, but was reminded by this book. Jack, you're Michael Clegg. Tash, you're Ben Thornley. And James, you're Robert Savage.
Brilliant.
Okay. Question number one. As it's a Neville's book, has to be about David Beckham. What was David Beckham's telephone bill from calling Victoria when away in Georgia?
Oh, Michael Clegg.
Yes.
So it was 800 each, so 1600
very
pounds.
Good, Bernhard. Very
that's
good.
So much. That's just
Michael Clegg.
Ludicrous amount of money. I cannot even
it
begin to
me
understand that.
It annoyed me that he brought that up with Beckham. Beckham was just like, give him that money back, please. Give him the money back. That's
Gary
not
Neville wasn't happy with that. Gary just rang Phil in the other room and went, are you okay, Phil? You're doing okay? Question number two. Why are United's youth team disqualified from the Copa Carnaval 1998?
Oh, Michael Clegg! Michael Clegg! They didn't show the referee their passports before the game. Inexplicable.
What's really strange, right?
That is such a weird rule.
Really, really odd. They get kicked out of the tournament for not showing their passport.
Bloody EU!
What does Phil Neville offer his autograph in exchange for when having fish and chips with his girlfriend?
What? Michael Clegg!
Yep. Clegg is it again.
He's talking to 20 schoolboys.
Jesus, knowledge is good at this
I
book.
Know, it's weird. I'm really sorry, guys.
How do you do this?
I hated this book, but it's imprinted on my memory forever. Very weird. And he says to these 20 school children, you can have my autograph if you look after my car.
That is it.
Then he's like, what a great car alarm. He's like, yeah, but you can have a car alarm. You can have an actual car alarm. That'd be better.
And finally,
children.
Yeah, children are a great car alarm. It's always said. Question number four. Final question. What caused, I think we know who's going to win it. What caused a delay in England's bus departing after the Columbia match at France 98?
No idea.
Oh, Michael Clegg?
Yep.
Is it the dad of David Beckham not getting the right thing so they all had to... No, okay, I don't know.
I'll give you it. That's close enough. Michael Owen's dad had a seat in a different part of the stadium and he couldn't find the coach. So they just sat there for 2.5 hours until he turned up.
What?
After the England match. So strange.
That is, again, so bizarre. So
anyway, well done, Michael Clegg. You've won this quiz convincingly. And as a treat... you get a Ken song this week. Are you excited for that? Yeah, we haven't done it so far this week. So here we go. So far this series, we've had Give It to Rio Coca and She's the One to Michael Tong. this one to the tune of Danger High Voltage by Electric Six. Don't you want to know how he keeps jumping higher? It's his desire. It's his desire. Don't you want to know how he keeps jumping higher? It's his desire. His desire. Danger. Danger. Mark Bosnich in the goal on the pitch. Danger, danger.
Oh, that's so
Mark
good.
Mark Bosnich in the goal and on the pitch is Ken Song.
Oh, James, you have to start singing. You have to start singing.
I don't know. I'd love to sing, but well, ready. Who knows?
Maybe we could get Jack White to do it.
Yeah
maybe.
We should get Cammy to do them. He loves the song.
Yeah. We should get Jack White to read Cammy's autobiography. That'd be about
no, because if Cammy did it, he'd accidentally insult Ken Song.
That's
midway
true.
Through.
Yeah, he wouldn't like that.
Ken Song. His songs are all rubbish. And Ken Song will be sitting there going, getting sadder and sadder as each moment went by.
Jack Wright reading Darren Anderson's autobiography would be my two heroes from my childhood colliding, which would be incredible. Anyway, next week we're reading Stephen Gerrard's My Autobiography with comedian Glenn Moore. If you've read the Neville's autobiography or any other books we've been reading the series, or you plan on reading any of them, get in touch. Get in touch about anything. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at Footy Book Club, Instagram at Football Book Club, and we're on Facebook. And make sure you're listening to the podcast 21st Century Football, also with Crowd Network. You're going to really enjoy it. They talk about all the best players of the 21st century. I'm sure a few of them probably popped up in this Neville's book.
Mark Viduka, Luka Modric, Jack White.
Shola and Sammy Amiobi. But yeah, make sure you listen to that. I think you really enjoy it. Guys, before we head off, any last words?
Two goal Neville, whatever next.
Very nice.
People talk to you when you're two goal Neville.
Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Natasha Daniels, James Balgin, and Jack Bernhardt. It was created by James Bug, and it was a Crowd production. Thanks to the Nevilles for writing the book, but where are they now? Well, Gary is now a pundit on Sky, and Phil manages David Beckham's Inter Miami. And yes, Gary is absolutely seething Phil gets to spend so much time with David. Alex Ferguson enjoyed Spice World, the movie, so much, he bought a Cineworld Unlimited card and has been spotted watching She's All That, Clueless, and 10 Things I Hate About You. Henny Berg has been accidentally locked in the Old Trafford toilet all through lockdown, and finally, 25 years later, Gary's still waiting for the kitchen for his barn to turn up. The theme Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner, is used on a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back next week reading Stephen Gerrard's My Autobiography with the brilliant comedian Glenn Moore. We'll see you then. In the meantime, if you enjoyed the show, please pop a review in for the podcast. We'd love you more than Phil Neville loves coconut shy. Bye bye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.